A walk down memory lane with our very own Jewish encyclopedia. It's Talk of the Town with Isaac Resnick, only on your station, 101.9 Chai FM.
Good morning. Welcome. Beautiful weather in Johannesburg this morning. It's going to warm up. We have in the studio two very, very special guests, Shoshana Kaplan, who
doesn't need introduction.
No introduction. And Dina Diamond.
Dina Kaplan also.
Right.
Yeah.
And we were going to talk this morning about your visit to Lithuania and Latvia and a wonderful discovery that you came across there. So over to you, Shoshana, and please introduce the subject.
Thank you so much. First of all, hello, Chai FMers. I'm sorry I haven't been around for a little bit. But while I was in Dallas a couple of weeks ago, my niece, Dina Diamond, contacted me and said that she was in Lithuania. So I said, the most important thing is, where are you now? So she said she was in Kovna. I said, Dina, do me a favor. When you go to Vilna, you've got to go to the university and look up the Yiddish library, because there's a special lady there. In 2012, I met her for the first time. Her name is Farnia Brantovsky. She was a partisan in the Second World War, and I spoke to her in Yiddish, because that's what we could. I don't speak Lithuanian, and so she spoke in Yiddish with me. It was given unsere Yiddish von Letter, Isaac. Unser jüdischer jüdischer von Lithuania, nicht
also wir polnischer, nicht angurischer.
Das ist gewinn unsere von daheim. Also wir unsere älteren hat geredet. And so I said, please, Dina, whatever you do, please, if she was there for a very short time, wow, please see if you can find this Farnia. We didn't know that she was alive, because in 2012, I met her. In 2013, I met her. And then now this is 2017. And she was the same age as the late Shimon Peres. And she said that he had his birthday same time as her. And there's a picture here. I'm sorry that we are on radio. I can't show you these things. But there's a photo here of all the congratulations she had from the East European republics for her 90th birthday. So now she is 95. And thank God Dina met her. Dina went to the Pinar Forest. And then can I give it over to Dina and tell her what and ask her what happened?
Yes, exactly. So it literally was an absolute, it was for sure, it was meant to be that we actually met this woman. So, yes, as my Aunt Shoshana mentioned, she was hacking me on the phone. You have to go find this Fania. She was 90 years old 5 years ago, so she's 95 now. We don't know if she's alive. She's the most wonderful woman. You have to find her. So we had been sort of running around on our travels. We had been driving from one shtetl to the next the previous day. And on this particular day, we decided we were going to go to the Pinar Forest to go and look at the memorial where they say 70,000 Jews were perished, actually basically were murdered in the forest. And we didn't have our tour guide with us that day. We thought we'd just go and look at the memorial and the forest. And as we arrived, there was this in front of one of the major memorial stones, there was a huge group of kids, like 14, 15-year-old kids. It was a group of like an exchange program they have with Lithuania, Israel, and LA, so the States. And this huge group of kids was standing around, all listening to this tiny little old woman who was speaking in Lithuanian, and there was another woman translating for them in English. So obviously we hear English and we think, great, let's go listen to see what this is. And to our absolute delight, it was this woman, Fania. So she, and it was completely, literally Bishop, because, as I said, you had told me the day before to go find her, and we didn't have time that day. But as we got to the forest, she was there. She was giving her account of the history. She actually was a survivor, because she had been 2 hours before they liquidated the Vilna ghetto, which means basically they sent off all the people in the ghetto to die to the gas chambers. She walked, because there was so much chaos, she managed to walk out of the ghetto, literally walk out of the ghetto with her and a friend, and which obviously saved them. She walked for 33 hours straight, to the Radnicki forest, where the partisans were hiding and where they remained until the end of the war, fighting with the Soviets against the Germans. And, I mean, just to listen to this woman was such a privilege, was such an honor to hear her story. I mean, I said to – we actually landed up just joining the tour with all these kids. We asked their facilitators and their teachers if we could join their tour, and they were only too happy for us to join their tour. So we went with them through one part of the forest to the next part of the forest. And if we had just gone on our own, we would never have realized the enormity of what happened in that forest. So yes, there's a memorial, and yes, it says that in this forest, 70,000 Jews were murdered by the Nazis. It doesn't just say murdered; it says they were murdered and they were burnt, because the Nazis actually burnt the bodies.
But that happened afterwards.
Yes, it was the end of the war.
The end of the war, because the Nazis knew that there was this evidence.
Yes.
So they got a lot of Jewish guys to come to dig up the bones, mm-hmm. and to burn them.
Correct.
And those Jewish guys made a big tunnel. And they tried to get out
with a spoon,
whatever they could. And some did survive.
Yeah. So 64 of them were in that group that were
told 11 or 18.
11 survived.
11 survived.
Yeah,
right.
11 survived. And they literally dug their way. So at night, so basically during the day, their job was to take the bodies, uncover the bodies from those massive pits. And there are massive, massive pits in those forests. And there was even a children's pit. But we would never have seen this, because it just looks like garden paths. It's the most beautiful forest.
Beautiful.
It's gorgeous. The surroundings are amazing. But when you find out what the atrocities and the horror that happened in those forests, I mean, it literally just sends a shudder through your body. But just to have this woman, the survivor, with us at the time telling us her story was just phenomenal. And to have these group of kids from all over the world, so from Israel, from Lithuania, from Israel, promoting basically the learning of the history of the Holocaust and really what happened to our people. And what they did was they actually sang songs, and we sang Hatikva together, which was really, really moving.
Right, we're going to take an ad break. We'll be back in a few moments.
What's going on in the community? Let's find out with Isaac Resnick.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, we have in the studio this morning Shoshana Kaplan and Dina Diamond, who just come back from a tour to Latvia and Lithuania, and she's describing all her experiences there. But just before we continue, I must mention, unfortunately, those who passed away during the week. And there was Manny Sasson, Audrey Barbara Dreyer, Ruth Lee, Marlene Diamond, Stanley Finn, Julie Lazarus, Rosalind Pockroy, Anthony Leibovitz, Lionel Friedman, Nina Rosalie Obel, Alex Schuster, Mildred Merkin, and Anne Novice. We want to wish the respective families Chaim Tovim Arukim, and may they have no further sorrow. Now, on a very, very, very happy note, I want to wish a hearty Mazel Tov to my brother and sister-in-law, that's Mesh and Lorraine Resnick, on the engagement of their grandson in San Diego, that is Greg Rabinovitz, the eldest son of Cheryl and the late Neil Rabinovitz, and of course the grandson of the late Tzodik and Joyce Rabinovitz. And he's engaged to a lovely lady called Ilana, and her parents are Todd and Dina Kobenik. So I want to wish them Mazel Tov,
Mazel Tov.
And Neman Beit Yisrael. So, Dina, over to you again. You were busy telling us about this wonderful woman you met who survived the Vilno ghetto.
Yeah. So, as I was saying, that we actually went with Faina, and we were literally spellbound by every single word she said. And as we went through one part of the forest to the next, and the kids, which was so moving as well, they all read. So when we got to the major memorial, apparently Lithuania only became independent in 1991. So you've got to understand, when the Germans entered in 1941, they only really, when the Red Army entered and they started losing the war, the Russians, the Soviets, and there's a big difference between Russians and Soviets, I got told, when they entered into Lithuania, the Soviets ran Lithuania until 1991. So religion wasn't really really optional. You weren't allowed to practice freely. And the Soviets had put up a memorial, and there was a huge debate in the forest as to whether or not, because they wrote they were murdered by the Nazis and their local collaborators. So there was a huge, huge sort of fight, I guess, internally as to whether or not they would say that they were allowed to have local collaborators. But we did stand at the memorial that has been redone, and it is in Yiddish and Hebrew. And what the kids did, they all read a portion from diaries of Jews that were murdered or that were in the ghetto and that they found. And that was very, very moving. And as I mentioned, when they sang HaTikva, it was a universal Jewish moment, because it's not something that just relates to a certain country if you're Jewish or not. It relates to the entire history of the people. And they also sang the song from Chana Senesh, so one of, again, the fighters during the war in the forest. And it was just an unbelievably, unbelievably moving moment.
Shoshana, would you like to also comment?
Well, what I wanted to say was that being in touch with Dina, I was in Dallas, she was in Lithuania, so technology and the miracles of technology are incredible, number one. Number two, the Siyata Deshmaya, that's personal intervention of Hashem in the situation. I was there, she was in Europe, I was in America, she was in Europe, and Dina met Fania, the lady that I wanted her to speak to. Now, I want to invite you, our listeners of Chai FM, please, will you phone in with some of your Siyata Deshmaya stories? We'd love to have them. If you don't want to phone in, okay, then send us a text.
You can send us a text, 34519, and our phone is 074-654-7335.
The hand of Hashem in your life, and I'm sure that it has happened to many, many people. Now, Dina has also got other stuff that she was very excited to tell us, and that is that she went to the archives and she saw the bill of lading. Well,
it's the shipping ticket.
Shipping ticket of my late mother. That's her granny and her baba and my mom, Nina Kaplan. She was Nina Sweef. It was 1935 that. Now Isaac's got the copy in front of him. Do you want to read it, Isaac?
No, let Dina. Dina was there. Okay. She can read it.
Okay.
All right. So, let me just give you some context to the archives. So, there are a lot of South Africans now. It's become quite popular for South African Jewry to trace their roots back to Lithuania and to try and actually get Lithuanian citizenship for many reasons, for visas, for connection. So, and also, so if you want to get your Lithuanian passport, there's a certain statute in terms of time that you're allowed to have applied if your family came to South Africa during a certain period, between the First World War and the Second World War, and obviously after the start of the First World War. And, what you need to do is you actually have to go and you've got to find the records of your family. So there's a site called, JewishGen.org, and then there's also a site which takes you to it. It's a Litvak site particularly. And if you go there and you search the name of your family, it's quite difficult because the names change so much. So Sif, for example,
Ziv.
Changed to Ziv. And then not only that, but the Russians changed the name of the father, the mother, and the child. They all had different surnames. So to be able to locate that, it generally does help to have someone who can help you with the archive, someone who is local. We did have someone with us who was outstanding. She is a genealogist. And when I was searching through the archives, I found a reference. So what you do is when you get onto the computers in the archives in Vilnius, there you get a reference, and it tells you what type of reference. And this one had an immigration reference. So sometimes it's passport, sometimes it's student, sometimes it's marriage. And this one particularly had an immigration reference. So what you've got to do is you've got to find it, the actual document, and then you've got to make sure it's the right person and the right dates. And then you've got to request it from the archive. So we requested it on the one morning and we returned the next day to find it. And what they brought me, I was just blown away. I didn't realize I was going to get this, was the shipping ticket of the Royal Mail Steam Packet Company in 1935. And it was registered in 26 Kaunas, Latvia, Silesia. And on the ticket, in terms of the people that were on this ticket, was my late great grandparents, Wolf and Hanasora Sief, my grandmother Nina, and her sister who'd been married, and then her son. So, this, and it gives their ages, etc. But just to actually find the physical shipping ticket of their journey was just unbelievable. It's not something I ever thought I would find. And they do let you take a copy. You're not allowed to take the original, but phenomenal just to find something like this.
You know, I must just mention that the Lithuanians, like the Nazis, Maximo, they kept absolute strict records of everything. We have, my brother and I, we managed to come across the death certificate of our granny, and they got it. She died of old age. She didn't die, wasn't murdered in the, but she died of old age. They kept every single record, even a Brit Mila of all our uncles and cousins who were born in Krakow. They came from Krakow, as it's known today. So that's how strict they were.
Yeah, no, I mean, we were fascinated by what was there. So I went with two friends of mine. I went with Sorrel Cohen and Michelle Rosen. And we had both, we'd all together actually had been to Poland before. And when we were in Poland and we'd seen the history and the devastation in Poland, we decided we'd like to see directly where our own ancestors came back from. And in the archives as well, what Sorrel found, exactly what you're saying in terms of the records, she found her late great aunt's work permit from the Kovno ghetto. So she was a photographer, her late aunt, and she was, because the Jews weren't, I mean, obviously, if you had basically a profession or something that could help the Nazis, which they needed, then you thought maybe it was more likely that they'd leave you to stay alive or maybe look after you a little bit better. But you had to have a pass to be able to go in and out of the ghetto. And this, when she looked up her file, she got, the file came, and I mean, I was also blown away, but she literally got her great aunt's work permit from 1942. It says on a Jewish ghetto. And it's stamped, and it's got the date and signatures, and it also just something that blew me away completely.
Who gave them the work permit?
So it had to come through the Nazis.
The Nazis.
Yeah. And unfortunately, what happened with the Kovno ghetto is that they liquidated the ghetto. Again, they sent everyone to be murdered. And what happened was there were Jews hiding in the bunkers underneath.
Two bunkers. You remember, I told you there were two bunkers.
Yes.
Because the Germans knew that there were people going to be in bunkers.
Correct.
So they went and they looked for them. And they found the ones in the first bunkers. But Rabbi Oshri's.
Ephraim Oshri.
He and 38 people had dug a second bunker. And this was really, really down below. Very, very dark, obviously. Apparently they had a skin problem there because there were lots of chochos.
There was lice.
There were lice. Yeah. But they survived. The 38 people survived.
Yeah, right. And they were the only survivors. The people in the top bunkers, unfortunately, were, because the Nazis knew there were people hiding underneath and they burnt the ghetto.
They literally raised
it to the ground.
Just as an aside, you should, if anyone can get a copy of the book by Rabbi Ephraim Oshri, it's called The Annihilation of Lithuanian Jewry. It's an absolute, it's absolutely unbelievable to read the atrocities that were done by the Nazis and the Poles and the Lithuanians as well.
I
got this book because I was doing research also, and I opened it up. It's a beautiful book, hard-covered, beautiful book in color. And as I opened it up, I don't know why, but I actually felt taken into the ghetto. I felt I was there. It's a very amazing feeling to have. I actually felt I was there.
And Rabbi Oshri had to do such, you know, he had to posik on some of the most horrific stories that came out, particularly with that Dr. Mengele, Yemach Shemor, who did all the experiments on the women and on the children. And as a matter of fact, I don't know if some of you read a few weeks ago, they've now found in Argentine, where Dr. Mengele managed to escape, all the instruments that he used.
Yes, I did see that.
during the war. They're unbelievable. Remember, they made a movie called The Boys from Brazil.
Yes.
It starred Gregory Peck and Sir Laurence Olivier. I remember it very well. Where Mengele, where Gregory Peck acted as Mengele, was going to clone Hitler, Yamach Shamo. It was unbelievable. And this was Mengele. He was an absolute, I would describe him as a cannibal. He was unbelievable what he did.
A genius, using his genius in the wrong.
I said, Ephraim Oshri, the rabbi, had to give all these to the woman who came to him. You know, the Nazis did experiments with them, and they even established brothels and all that, and he had to do this. I remember him very well. He came to South Africa in 1946. He had a brother living here, Max Oshri, who lived in the southern suburbs. And I remember he was married. His first wife died here in Johannesburg and in childbirth. And then there was no one to look after the baby, so they sent the baby to Cotlands, and the baby was there for 3 years, and then he went to America and he remarried, and he wrote this book. It's unbelievable. And I heard him the first time at the Jeppy Shul, where he came, because the Oshries, their in-laws were the Kestons. They lived in Wilhelmina Street in Troyville, and he stayed with them. The shul was packed to capacity, but there wasn't a dry eye. The way he described, and I was a little boy of 9 years old, listening to this, and that made an impression upon me for the rest of my life. I've never, ever forgotten that. Unbelievable.
But now, isn't it an interesting fact that the Germans, and you say now the Lithuanians, I didn't know that, were so particular about keeping the records. And yet you have a huge group of people who deny that
Holocaust
took place.
Yeah.
Now you want to tear your hair out.
You know, there's the other thing is, the Germans were so particular, the Nazis, they were going to say they were going to execute 500 a day, be sent to the camps. And you stood in a queue, and if you were 501, they'd send you away, because you weren't on the record for that day. And that's the way you managed to survive. That's how they were. But everybody, remember, they engraved on your arm your number, and every name and every number was recorded.
Accounted for.
And now, after the war, 70 years after the war, they're releasing all these records, all these Nazi records.
Yeah. But it is, it is unbelievable when you look at, just when you talk about Mengele, and we look about, and we also look at, and you're saying 500 a day, but when we were in Latvia, we went to the forest there as well, and they murdered 25,000 Jews in 2 days. 25,000 Jews in 2 days.
That's the one where you see, it's the outside kind of memorial, where you see each rock has
a name on it.
Did you see something which was unbelievable? As I walked in, they had a plant, and it's a red plant, and it's got like veins, and I really felt that that was like the blood of those people there. That was in between the rocks.
Yes. Yes. It's a very eerie thing to be in those forests. Very, very eerie.
There's that late Ronnie Mink. I'm sure many of you remember him from the King David School. He was a brilliant historian on the Holocaust. And the shtetl where his family came from was called Jedwabna. And they took all the inhabitants of that village, and they put them into a barn, and they set them alight. They burnt them all alive. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
And it wasn't necessarily the Germans. It was the Lithuanians.
It was the Lithuanians, and of course some of the Poles as well.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to say that some of the Jews themselves were in collaboration with the Germans
to try and help survive.
To survive.
Well, they thought that would help them live.
They would help them live.
Meantime, it didn't help any of them.
There were 240,000 Jews in Lithuania, and 220,000 were murdered.
Right. We're taking a break. We're back in a few moments.
You're listening to Talk of the Town with Isaac Resnick on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. Just to remind you, today is a fast day. The 17th of Tammuz, Shiva Osaba Tammuz. And of course, from today we start what we call the dry wochen until we come up to Tisha B'Av, which will be a all day, 24 hour fast. Today's fast, half a day, it started this morning at, afternoon. It was 5:42. It ends this evening at 5:49. So we're talking in the studio with Shoshana Kaplan and Dean Diamond, who's just come back from Lithuania. And Shoshana was in Dallas, and she managed to contact Dina to look up some people that she met when she was there a few years ago. So you got some other interesting stories to tell us. Please continue.
Thank you. My late uncle Sydney wrote a book, Portals of Memory. And in that book, he has lovely stories. Well, lovely stories. He has stories which are fascinating. In the First World War, between 1914 and 1918, the Jews living in Lithuania had to be expelled, because the Russians said that the Jews spoke the same language as the Germans and that they were spying for the Germans, because Yiddish and German is
very similar.
Very similar. There are quite a few words there that you can understand. So our family, it was left, because there were some of our family who were in South Africa already, but those who were there were expelled from Lithuania and sent east, deep into Russia. Now, our uncle Morris Afasholim tells us that he had taken the family silver and he had hidden it in their garden.
Yeah, because they knew that when the Jews were expelled, they knew they had a few hours literally to gather their belongings and then had to leave. Whatever they could carry is what they were allowed to take.
Right. So they buried their silver. Mm-hmm. And Dina told me an addendum to this I didn't know. So when they came back, they went
And they put a vegetable patch over the silver. So like they buried it deep in the ground and they put a vegetable patch. So they thought, you know, like it's a small chance, but maybe some chance that if we put a vegetable patch, they won't dig deeper and they won't try and find the silver.
Okay, so carry on. What happened after that?
No,
so they came back and what happened with the limestone, didn't you?
So after the war ended, they waited a bit of extra time, because what happened was the bridge and all of that crossed the river where it actually allowed access to the town, to Krakanova, was razed to the ground. So when they came back, they waited a few years after the war. So they came back in 1920 and they went back to the place where their house was. And they decided to put a fence around the house, and they thought, oh no, the neighbor next door had taken there was a new neighbor next door, and he had dug to create a limestone quarry. And they looked at this and they thought, no, there's no chance that the silver and all the valuables will still be there. And they thought, you know, let's just build a fence around our house and then we'll dig and look for it. So they built a fence around their house and then they started digging. And by some sheer miracle, they found all their goods that they had buried like 5 years before. It was unbelievable.
Aren't you picturing what you saw where our family's house was?
Yes.
Just there was that whole row of Jewish houses on the square.
Mm-hmm, by the market
and
square.
I could see the bridge. And then behind was the river.
Yeah, the Rete River.
The Rete River. And then just between the street and the river was the well, which they got where they got their water from. We can just see it.
That's crazy.
Isn't it amazing to go back to where my mom and your
unbelievable. Yeah. And your great-grandparents. I mean, just to be there where they lived, and to tell you that Krakanova today is still a shtetl. So there were 200 shtetls in Lithuania, and they are still shtetls. Still, if you go back to Lithuania, there is a center of town, but the rest of it still is like 1820.
You see people walking with a horse and cart.
Yeah, and you see wooden houses and wood stores. It is like going back in time. It's a crazy, crazy experience.
But we saw something which was really fascinating. We were seeing some people who were bringing up the water from the well. Because they didn't have the water.
You didn't have a pump.
A pump. They didn't have it. No, you couldn't open up a tap. And while he was doing this, he was speaking on his cell phone. I mean, just the past and the future. Just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, what even happened was when we went there, because of this book, Portals of Memory, Sydney had included pictures of the town that existed before. And So I took part of the book with me with some of the pictures, and we got to the town, and the woman that we were with, Regina, our tour guide, I mean, running around like a lunatic. I mean, that's why she's so great at her job, because she'll speak to anyone, everyone. She finds some woman. We arrive in Krakonova, in this town, and which is north. So it's north of Kovna, and close to Ponovich.
About 30 kilometers, my mother used to say. She took a 30 kilometers from there. Exactly. And it's not a town. It's a village.
Listen, a shtetl's a shtetl. And what happened is, when we got to the town, she said, okay, she found a woman. She said, where's the oldest man in the town? And we went to find him. So we made the woman get in the car, drove around, went into this guy. So we went to find him in his house, and he's a little vegetable patch. He was suntanning. He's in his 80s. And
summer there, remember now.
No, gorgeous weather. Yeah. And he got dressed a bit, he took us into his house, which really, again, looks like 1800. I mean, that's literally what the house looks like. And he took a look at this book, and he said, my father took these photos. He said he was a photographer.
For those that are in Uncle Sydney's book.
In Uncle Sydney's book. So, I mean, that, again, just blew me away. And then we spent some time with him, and he took out some photos that his father had given him from the town and some of the inhabitants. So we spent a bit of time, and I wanted to take photos of the photos, and he wasn't so keen on that. But when you talk about the cell phones, I don't think he knew. So we put away our cameras, but he didn't know that a cell phone could take a photo. So we sat taking pictures of all the photos with our cell phones, which was quite funny.
But you mentioned Ponovich. And your late mother went to the...
Yes, so I've got a photo here. I'm sorry, I say you can't see it. With my daughter, that's the next generation, where her grandmother went to school. It is the local municipality, head of the municipality, and the Jewish people have got it as a center. And they said to us, when we spoke to them, thank you for coming. So we said, well, why? He said, because if not for you, Yidden, coming here, the Lithuanian authorities would close us down.
Yeah. So your mother went to, as you said,
Yavden Gymnasia.
Yeah, there is. And that's where the Rabbi Yosef Kahaneman was the Rosh Yeshiva in Ponovus.
I don't know if it was about this particular Yavden Gymnasia, this girls' school, but Rav Kahaneman came to South Africa.
Correct.
To raise money.
Money, yes.
So apparently he went to someone, a big gevir, and said, I would like some money to be able to build a school in Lithuania. The person said to him, you can build a school and I'll give you money, provided there are no tzitzis and yarmulkes running around. So he said, fine, I'll build a girls' school.
It's always one way around it.
Given a Zach Kluger.
Yes, he was there. Well, and of course, he came to South Africa several times. I've mentioned this before. He was at your brother's
Bar Mitzvah,
I think it was 1956.
Right.
He came. And also.
1950. Well, he was born in 1943, Ronnie. Yes, you're right.
56.
Well, 50. I never. What a cop, kind of horror.
And I must mention also that when the first time he came in, I've told this before, but just some of the listeners who haven't heard of it, he met Rabbi Moshe Feinz Friedman from the Griene Besser Medrash, which was right down in Ferreira-Storp. And he told him to buy property, and he bought a very big stand. And a few years later, Reb Moshe told him to sell it in 1930. And you know what that stand was? Today, where the magistrate's court is. And with that money,
he started to build for
Ponovich.
In Bnei Brak.
And then he came a few years later, and he bought property in Elof Street. And that's what he did. And then he managed to build the magnificent yeshiva in Israel today. Right.
Ponovich yeshiva in Bnei Brak.
Right. So we're taking a break. We're back in a few moments.
A walk down memory lane with our very own Jewish encyclopedia. It's Talk of the Town with Isaac Resnick, only on your station, 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome back. If you've got anything you want to add, please text us 34519.
Come on, Chai FM. Why haven't you answered us? Why haven't you phoned in?
074-6547-335. So, Dina, just tell us some concluding remarks, and you, Shoshana, and anything you want to tell our listeners about Latvia particularly. And did you go to Vilna, by the way?
So absolutely. We stayed in Vilna. We stayed in Vilna for 5 days, and that's where our base was. And we literally drove the country. We rented a car, which is so doable. The roads are fantastic. And even though you're driving on the wrong side of the road, and we literally, because that's the only way we could all go find our town. So my friends Michelle and Sorrel as well.
Where did they want you to go to?
So Rogova, and ironically her name, Michelle's maiden name was Rogoff, and they, even though she says her surname was Liechtenstein, and they figured out that maybe they came to South Africa, they didn't speak any English, they said, what is your name? And they said Rogova, so they made it Rogoff. So, uh-huh. And I think there are a lot of stories like that.
There are a lot like that, yes.
Have their towns as their surnames.
Yes.
And Latvia, I mean, so yes, so when you hear about all these things, so you hear everyone in South Africa, all the Jewish population here, you say, where's your family from? They say Lithuania. You say, where from in Lithuania? They don't know. And if we do not find out now, you're not going to find out, because the generations are passing. And if you don't make the effort to ask your parents, to ask your grandparents, maybe even like if you're lucky enough, your great-grandparents, the names, the dates, right, the towns, you're not going to get that information, because it's going to be a lost generation. There's no way you can go and find that information. So what I would do is encourage everyone, if you know you come from Lithuania, if you know you come from Latvia, actually if you come from anywhere else, right, take the time, take the effort now, because the generations aren't, unfortunately, with us forever. And it's an amazing opportunity when you go. And also we hear about Vilna, we hear about Kovna, we hear about the Vilna Gaon, and you go to his house where he lives, and you see all these amazing, amazing things. And just another quick little antidote is when we went to the house of the Vilna Gaon by the Jewish ghetto in Vilna, and you're walking in the streets of history. There was a woman there showing an American woman around, and our guide introduced us to this woman, and she said, this woman is the daughter of one of the righteous amongst the nations. So her parents had saved Jews during the war.
Wow.
And she was carrying on the tradition and showing other Jews from around the world the history of Lithuania. It was unbelievable. Really.
And
unbelievable.
Vilna is a very modern city.
Vilna is a modern city. I mean, there's the old town, which is beautiful, the old center of town. But the rest, there's a Radisson Hotel, There's shops. It's a small town, but it is beautiful.
They used to always refer to that Stadt Vilna. It was very, very cultural, enormous culture in Vilna there. Shoshana, your concluding.
What happened with us once, we also stayed in Vilna over Shabbos, because then we could eat at the Chabad house, which was the only place you could have kosher.
Yeah.
And on the way back, we saw a whole crowd of people, and they had decided that they were going to elevate the restaurant and have lunch in the air. So that's what they were doing. They were getting ready on the ground with all these big ropes and cables and everything like that. There must have been 12 people sitting around the table, and then a few who were waiters. And that's what we saw walking back from Chabad to our hotel. We saw them, and then they raised them up. And the big thing was to have your lunch in there.
That's right. The dinner is a texture. Did you go on a tour?
So there are organized tours that do go to Lithuania. What we decided, though, is that we had very specific places that we wanted to go to, Michelle, Sorrel, and myself. So we organized, we did a lot of research. We all a bit focused on research. And Sorrel, even as a volunteer at the Holocaust Museum here in South Africa, in Joburg, with Tully Nates. And what we did is we found a tour guide named Regina, who a lot of people had used and had recommended. So we basically created our own tour. So we wanted to go to Latvia. We went to Latvia. We had a tour guide organized there, a Jewish woman who took us around to all the sites, and you tell them what you want to do.
You didn't go to Dvinsk, do you?
We didn't get a chance to go to Dvinsk.
Latvia was Riga.
Yes, so Latvia is Riga, so the capital of Latvia is Riga. And we actually drove from Latvia through to Lithuania, in like a combi, basically. And it was a day trip. Yes.
Sorry, if you go to Riga, then you go like a little bit down on the side of Lithuania, that's where Dvinsk was.
Dvinsk, yeah.
Dvinsk. Yes, or as I call it, Dagovpils.
Dagovpils. Right. That's where the awesome Mayach came from.
So we want to just thank Dina and Shoshana for coming in. It's been wonderful listening to this. It's really unbelievable. And as Dina says, please do your research. Ask your parents, your grandparents, your great parents. We don't want to lose this history, because if you don't know your past, you don't have a future.
Wonderful.
Thank you for coming, Shoshana. Thank you, Dina. Go well.
Absolutely.
Have a light fast.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the day. Thank you, Craig, for controlling.
Thank you. All the best. Bye.
Thank you.